And with that, members will call this meeting to order. Under the virtual, this will be a virtual meeting under House Rule 10.01. We don't need to call the roll. Cindy, do we have a quorum?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. With that, Representative Claiborne, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Chair Nelson, and I move that the minutes be approved as written.
Motion has been made to approve the minutes as written. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? With that, the minutes are approved. Thank you. We're still waiting on the rules. I think they're going to be approved pretty quickly here. We'll get them emailed out to you. Hopefully, we'll have those by Tuesday's meeting. So with that, we have the state auditor with us today, Ms. Blaha, and she's going to do a presentation, both a slight presentation, an overview of what they do, but also her budget request for this year. With that, Auditor Blaha, if you want to please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. My name is Julie Blaha. I'm your state auditor, and I'm joined here today also with my operations director, Director Matt Lindemann, who will also be hopping in, and he can get into the gears of how we have calculated all of the numbers that we're going to share with you today. So what I plan to do then is basically going through our budget proposal. I will go through briefly just talking about who we are, a little bit about some of the emerging risks that we see, and then how we use that to build our budget proposal. Now, of course, I know that once you got the idea, the document, the what we do document in your packet, you all probably spent a lot of time reading that last night in anticipation. But remember, the details are here. And since we are tightening things up this year, I won't be going into the same level of detail as we've done in the past, knowing that you can go back and check on that. Also, in the next couple of days, we'll be also sending you another document with some of the other numbers that I say today, particularly about our accomplishments. So don't feel you have to frantically write those down. I'll get this. That is coming out to you in a couple of days as well. So to start, to summarize what we do is the Office of the State Auditor oversees over $40 billion in local government spending. We're very focused on local governments. And that is, city, county, state, soil and water districts, school districts, any local entity falls basically under our purview. Now, we do it in three basic ways, provide this oversight. The first way, and the way that people are most familiar with and is the largest part of our work, is our examinations. We ensure financial integrity in local government financial activities this way. They include audits, standards oversight, compliance checks, and investigations. In fact, over the last couple of years in our office, through our examinations work, we have found 76 material audit adjustments. Now, that led to correcting local government budgets by over $63 million. We've facilitated the redistribution of $14.7 million in tax increment finance funds. When things were in the wrong spot, we helped get it to the right spot. We, in our investigations, found the diversion of over $250,000 in the city of Marshall. And in fact, did research that contributed to the conviction of the Visitor Bureau's director on 7 felonies. We also found the misuse of over $87,000 in theft of over $25,000 in the Shakopee School District, which contributed to the superintendent's, at the time's, conviction of 19 felonies. And now sometimes they're not as dramatic as that. Sometimes it's as simple as we found a little over $14,000 in missing revenue for a local sheriff's department as we went through their audit. Now, the next work that item that we do is we provide a significant amount of support. And we do that to help increase the effectiveness of local government. We create financial management software, we develop policy, we provide direct consultation, And we also conduct training on best practices. Over the last couple of years, we've updated and supported our CTAS system, which is it's basically QuickBooks for small entities in Minnesota specifically. About 1,300 small local government units use that software. We also provided training to over 2,000 people. We passed 18 technical fixes for fire relief associations over the last couple of years. We helped oversee $554 million in pension plan assets for over 13,000 volunteer and paid on-call firefighters. Also, part of my work is to serve on 7 boards that oversee over $103 billion in state government work. We also then provide analysis. All this data comes our way, all the stuff we get to see. Our goal is to pull that together to give decision makers like you fact-based, data-driven information so that you can make the best decisions possible. For instance, last year we created a State of Main Street analysis, and we analyzed over 20 years of local government trends, which I think will be really helpful this year when we take a look at what we do next. We created 24 reports of local government data. We certified eligibility to receive local government aid that totaled over $560 million. And we certified entities to receive $23.7 million in fire state aid. So we do things with big numbers and small numbers throughout our office. Now, with that kind of work, whenever we look at how we prioritize, we start out by analyzing risk. Everything we do is based on risk. Not that something will happen, something won't happen, but the likelihood that it could happen. And when we manage risk well, we get to avoid problems. When our office is doing our job really, really well, we are wrecking headlines. That's our job, is to wreck a headline. Our job is to try to help make sure something doesn't happen, keep you out of the news, keep you out of trouble. And we'd rather be paragraph 4 in any report where we give you the information to back it up. But we do that by trying to manage risk well for our local government entities. We see 3 emerging risks right now. And these are the risks that we are focused on. The first risk that we're looking at are budget shortfalls. We know when budgets are tight, that adds risk. It adds risks in a couple of ways. First off, it adds risk because often staff is being cut that might help provide the double checks on the financial work. It's some of the ways that you protect yourself is having some duplicated effort. And often that gets cut when budget shortfalls happen. In addition, budget shortfalls put pressure on systems. And we know that when you're looking to prevent fraud, one way you prevent fraud is preventing pressure. And so when you see pressure, you have to start looking carefully for fraud, waste, and abuse. Part of the fraud triangle, for those of you who study that, pressure is a big part of it, and budget shortfalls cause a lot of pressure. The next risk area that we're particularly concerned about is the complexity around COVID-19. I know some of you are on other committees that have been talking about how COVID funding is working, and you may have heard about just the kind of Herculean effort local governments have made to move resources to where they were needed as quickly as possible. It's a wonderful effort and a very complex one. And when you see that level of complexity, especially with new money, we know that can create some, again, risks for errors, when errors can lead to waste. And so we know that that's a complexity we need to be watching out for. And then finally, probably the most common risk that we see, and this one has been one of the underlying risks we have seen for decades, in our office, and that is small staffs. Small entities have vulnerabilities that large entities don't. You know, if you're looking at a county, counties we look at carefully because there's a lot of money there. But, you know, they also have a lot of infrastructure. They often have, if there's a private firm auditing a county, chances are they're a pretty experienced firm. If we're going in and looking, we're seeing that there's a larger staff to manage their financial protocols. But where we see risks are those small staffs, where it's that person where this is their, they're going to go out after they work, they're coming in then to the township office and trying to get some work done. Or this is their third job, and this one they're not paid for, you know. So we see that small staffs inherently are vulnerable to risk because of just the fact that there are so few people that are working with their money. So when we look at those again, those three risks, budget shortfalls, COVID-19 complexities, and small staffs. We compared that to what we do. We found about four areas that we need to shore up to meet these risks effectively. And so as we go through the budget proposal, what I'll do is I'll kind of talk through the rationale behind it, and then I'll switch over to Matt so he can get into the details. And this might be the time when you want to pull out the budget proposal document that we have. And it says our budget proposal 2021, and we're going to walk through that in some more detail. Basically, when we looked at these risks and our ability to meet them, our biggest concern was gaps in staffing. Not surprisingly, most of our budget is staff. 85% of our budget is people. And so we have some significant gaps in staffing that make it difficult for us to meet these needs. Now, the first one, of course, in our budget proposal, we have four components. We have an operating adjustment, a school accountability team, a township specialist, and an additional investigator. Those are the four components of our proposal. The first one is our operating adjustment. Now, this keeps us afloat. This keeps us able to do what we can do. Now, this gives us, we have some flexibility in here, so we've been able to pick things up as needed. For instance, when the Legislative Auditor's Office decided that doing the CARES Act single audit, a single audit is a specific audit on one program that's needed for the federal government. And so they weren't able to pick that up, but we were. So we were able to find that in the space we have in our operating adjustment. Now, this adjustment is basically inflation, and it gives us the ability to maintain the staff we have and continue doing the work that we do. And I'll maybe hop over to Director Lindemann to kind of go through how we set up our operating adjustment.
And 1 second before Matt starts, I've been informed that the rules have changed. Last session, we were doing the roll call at the beginning of the meeting by, you could do it by the participants, by the, just getting, make sure we have quorum. But with that, we have to do a roll call at the beginning of the meeting. So members, I'm gonna do a roll call here, break in, and then we will let Matt continue. So to start out, Representative Nelson, I'm here. Representative Carlson, Vice Chair, present. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Claiborne.
Claiborne, present.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Pawlowski. I don't see him on, I see him there. Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative Druskowski.
Present.
Representative Kosniak.
Kosniak, present.
Representative New Brindley.
Present.
And Representative Quam.
Present.
Thank you. And with that, Auditor Blaha, you can continue. And if Matt's going to start talking, if he could please identify himself before he for the tape and proceed with his testimony.
Chair Nelson and members, my name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the Minnesota Office of the State Auditor. So when we were in calculating our operating adjustment, what we look at are past expenditures in addition to known obligations such as leases, and then we look at projected expenditures for salaries, which are calculated by Minnesota management and budget. Our largest expenditures, as Auditor Blaha mentioned, is for compensation. For employee compensation, which is about 85%. The second most common, or the second largest expenditure we have is for rent. And we have an office in the main office in St. Paul. Our main office is in St. Paul. We have field offices in Rochester, Mankato, Marshall, Moorhead, and Duluth.
Great. All right. So again, that gets us, that keeps us whole.
is what that really is.
Auditor Blaha, yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Members, getting my sea legs back here for this. Our next item is our school accountability team. Now, some of you may remember last year we brought this to many of your attention. And in fact, we were on the docket, I believe, to have a hearing on this topic the day we basically shut down for COVID. So I was literally one day before it got heard last year. What we notice is that we haven't done an actual school audit out of our office since approximately the year 2000. Even if a school district wants to ask us to do an audit at this point, and we have had requests historically, we've had to say no because we do not have the staffing right now set up to do that. Not only does that mean that we're not doing audits, again, school districts are getting their audits done. They are getting done. But we're not even at this point really have the capacity to spot check their audits with a work paper review, like we do with counties, for instance. I think one of the things that a lot of legislators were saying is, well, you don't need to do all the audits out of the OSA, but you do need to have oversight of the people who are doing the audits. That would be a way to get at getting at all of the oversight that we need. Right now, if we can have a team of six auditors that are doing some audits, they are also then able to do the kind of, I think, the bigger goal of spot checking around. And one of the reasons we're really focusing on schools, not only because they're the biggest expenditure in the state, but also because they have so many small units. There are so many small school districts, and that adds some risk because of their size. And so we know that if we're not spot checking, that issues can build up over time to the point where we're seeing money not getting to where it's most needed, getting to our students. And this is not a time in history when we have any extra money to waste because of lack of oversight. So again, the school accountability team would be a team of six who do school audits and work paper reviews, a type of review of private firms' work. One of the reasons this is set out as another item is because we'd like to structure this in a way to move back into school audits in the least disruptive way possible. We know that if we come in and just say, guess what, we're here, we're doing your audit, start paying us, that can be quite disruptive, as people may remember with some of the re-audits we've had to do in the past. So this way, we would be going in and just for six school districts, offering to do their audit without charging, like we typically do. And that would get us to build our team and give us a sample of what's going on which we can build our larger spot checks. So the reason it's an extra cost is because we would not be charging the school districts for it. So it would be the cost of these six people would not be charged against the districts that they audit. And so that's why we wanted to pull it out as a change item on this. And maybe I'll throw it over to Chair Nelson, if we could have Director Lindemann talk about the calculation there.
Mr. Lindemann.
Chair Nelson, so as State Auditor mentioned, this change item is for six FTEs. It would include an audit manager, a staff specialist, a senior, two intermediates, and a entry-level auditor. So the positions are fairly well distributed among all of our position levels within the office. And the projected costs are mostly for compensation, but it does include a little bit of some other costs for some equipment, some travel for employee development, some supply costs. In calculating this, though, we tried to absorb some costs that we thought were already included in our current overhead. This would include rent and computer and system services. Normally, a request like this would have a net impact of zero because we would be asking for an increase in our general fund appropriation, but then we would receive non-dedicated revenues. But for this change item, we are specifically asking to be exempted from having to recover the costs of auditing these local governments.
It's hard to say Auditor Blaha.
Easier than Auditor Otto, though, right?
Yeah.
And you'll also see that we'll have a bill introduced in the next couple of days that gives us the exemption for charging for these audits. There is companion language that needs to go with this, and that is getting into the pipeline in the next couple of days here as well. All right, then our next item that we're looking at is a township specialist. This is also something that we asked for a couple of years ago. We are noticing that our townships do very well when they're well supported. They did, my office did a quick check of the townships that don't report to us in a timely fashion and those that end up in investigations because of problems. And we saw a high correlation there. We know that when we can get in there and ensure that they're reporting, ensure that their software is working, ensure that they understand changes in rules, help them when they have transitions from one staff member to another. When we have someone, they have a set contact in our office, we avoid a lot of problems. And so a township specialist would give us someone who can serve this group. I mean, we talked about over 1,700 townships. If we can have a staff person that can really focus on them, they can do their work much better. And we can reduce that risk that small staffs face and that we have seen play out in problems over time. So if we could have Director Lindemann speak to that.
Mr. Lindemann.
Chair Nelson. So this change item is for one FTE. We projected it at a senior level accounting position. So the projected costs are for all compensation. We felt that we could absorb all other costs within our current overhead.
Auditor Blaha.
Thank you. Our final item, final place where we saw that we needed to shore up and fill a gap in staffing is by adding an investigator. Now, like the rest of our office, we have had, when these divisions, our divisions were created, they were created at a much higher staffing level. In fact, since 2003, our staffing has dropped by about 45% just in that time, with a combination of some change in our work, but also mainly because our funding has gotten behind inflation year after year after year. As a result, it has just eroded down to, again, we've lost about 45% of our staffing since then. And so one of the places that we believe additional staffing is needed is in our investigations division. We are getting more and more requests as people see how effective we are in aiding law enforcement in fraud and abuse cases. And so if we can have another investigator, we're going to be able to respond to local law enforcement more quickly. We're going to be able to respond to other requests that we're getting more quickly. And I think we see now, in a time when we are trying to rebuild trust in basic information, frankly, any delay in information causes problems. You know, the faster we can get you the results of investigation, the less time we have to have fake information getting out there and filling the gap. We also really do appreciate that when we have budget shortfalls and we have complexity in funding, that people are more suspicious, frankly, of what we're doing in government. And so we want to be able to check their concerns and get them an answer as quickly as possible. Another investigator would really help us do that. And so I know Director Lindemann can speak to the cost calculation on that.
Director Lindemann.
Chair Nelson, this change item is for one FTE. We projected it at an intermediate level investigator position. The projection costs are for all compensation again. We felt that we could absorb all the other costs within our current overhead.
Thank you. Auditor Blaha.
You know, these
do summarize our main asks. The only ask, I want to just put a caveat in here. The only ask that may change is as we are looking at safety in our office, we are taking a look at how we are structured to handle current threats on elected officials. And so we may need to make some changes in our office because of that. And we're looking at those costs. So the bottom line, though, of our proposal is
that the operating adjustment would be $644,000, and this is over 2 years, over the next 2 years. We're looking at about $1.49 million for the school team. Then $218,000 for the township specialist, and $210,000 for the investigator. That translates into FTEs, and I want to make sure that the way FTEs are stated here, and I'm not necessarily so much for the group that's this committee, but for the people watching outside, you'll notice that even our when we look at our adjustment, our operating adjustment, we need to list that as FTEs. Now that is protecting 8.5 FTEs. If we don't get that adjustment, we have to lay off 8 people. So if we get the adjustment, it's not that we add 8.5 people, is that we don't lay off 8.5 people because of costs increases. And so again, that our operating adjustment protects 8.5 people. One of the reasons proportionally, again, it looks it can look a little different than the other three items, is because when we're looking at layoffs, they're generally layoffs of our newest staff and also our least expensive staff. So that's why our audit adjustment, our operating adjustment protects 8.5 staff members. We will be adding 6 people for our school team to oversee, over 400 school districts. We would be adding 1 township specialist and 1 investigator on here. Another thing to always think about, we just want to add a little context as well. Our budget, our entire OSA budget is about 0.05% of the state budget, which, has been pretty consistent over the years. It has, the size of our budget has changed in comparison to the amount that we oversee. When you compare how much our budget compared to our size of our oversight, that has dropped over the years. But right now, again, of the whole state budget, we're 0.05%. And then, of course, our proposal is about 0.007% of the state budget. And as a math teacher, I just couldn't resist pulling out some of my math graphics to speak to that. Again, our goal is to mitigate risk, to make sure that our local governments are held to high standards and are as effective as possible in a time when we need them more than ever. So with that, we would be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Unmute myself, yes. Representative Nash, you have the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Auditor. Appreciate you being here this morning. Mm-hmm. Very familiar with your office, having served on this committee now for 7 years. You and I had a chance to go over this yesterday, and I asked you this question. Right now, Minnesotans across the state are losing businesses, losing jobs. They are in some fairly desperate financial times. The state budget forecast is projecting a deficit that's pretty substantial. And I said this yesterday, and I'll say it again. This strikes me as very tone deaf, in a message that you'd be sending to people across the state, because we all know that revenue comes from individuals' checkbooks and wallets. And I certainly understand the need to perform audits, and I think it's important. But I guess my question is, or one of my questions is, what have you looked to cut first before you look to come back and ask for a very large monetary budget increase? And I guess my first question is, you've got remote offices. How many of them are currently in use right now? Do you have people in those actual offices?
Auditor Blaha.
Thank you. Fair questions. And then hopefully Director Lindemann will catch me if I'm off on any of these. I can certainly understand the times that we're in. And one of the reasons that we have to be honest with you about what we're going to need to do our work, one of the things we have to be really cognizant of is the fact that my office, along with the other constitutional offices, frankly, we were recession-sized already back in 2003, never regained any of that funding.
We did not go. In fact, we then fell from there. So we, at a certain point, you just can't pull anymore without having problems. And one of the problems, if we are not able to provide the oversight, we end up getting more fraud, waste, and abuse. And we know that when you have good oversight pays for itself. If we are able to move $63 million back to where it's supposed to be over the last 2 years, certainly worth it. If we're able to make $14.7 million more available in tax increment financing for meeting our needs, that pays for itself. And on the flip side, not doing it well enough, having a big problem and wasting money is something we can't afford to do right now. So it's ironic, but that at times when the times are toughest is when the oversight is even more essential. And so you don't want to, lose the dollars trying to save a couple of pennies. I believe that this work absolutely pays for itself. Also, when you talk about where we have made cuts or how we've handled COVID, one of the things that we have done is that we talk about cutting. Again, our office over the last several years has cut a couple of main positions. For instance, we have one less deputy than we are allowed, and not looking to refill that. We have also, when it comes to saving money, we were able to handle COVID, for instance, right now, in a way that we didn't have to take any CARES Act funding. One of the reasons that we're able to do the CARES Act audit for the state is because we didn't receive any of that funding. We were able to absorb all the changes in costs, partly because we do so much remote work. That's also one of the reasons that our footprint is relatively small around the state, because we'd already had people teleworking quite a bit. So those offices around the state in greater Minnesota are actually quite small and not a huge cost. Now, as we look to help add people, we don't believe we need to add any space. That we're able to, we did not look at adding space to absorb these costs because of that. And so honestly, we already were had a relatively small footprint because of all the telework we were already doing. So, and we plan to continue that. So I think what that means is that we don't need to expand to handle this. Do we want to look at cutting some rent? We are definitely looking at that as well. I don't want to cut the staff though. One of the opportunities we have that I think is really important in our office, you know, these are good jobs that we're providing, and they're definitely the kind of jobs the whole state deserves. We're seeing even more that we're able to operate with staff across Minnesota without necessarily having to have them near one of our offices. So, for instance, Bemidji State has a great accounting program. What we're learning about through COVID is how much easier it'll be to hire somebody who wants to stay in Bemidji, and they can work for our office. They don't need to be near one of our field offices. But as far as where the rents are, those are also our lowest rents around the state. Frankly, anytime I can locate people in greater Minnesota, it's easier. We do need to have a physical presence. We do have to have a place to hold records. We need to have a place to get together. And since our people work in teams, we do need a place where local government officials can come in and meet with us directly. We are definitely watching that as a potential cost saving as well. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else, Director Lindemann, that maybe you can add to this that maybe I've forgotten.
No, I think you covered it very well.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, Madam Auditor, perhaps you can forward us once you're out of committee the rents for the remote offices. And I get that they're lower, but here's the reality. You're asking for a budget increase, and you can say that you're saving money and things will pay for themselves, but by virtue of the fact that you're asking for more money, where does that come from? It's going to have to come from a budget increase. It's going to have to come from taxes, more than likely. Again, at a time when Minnesotans are desperate, you know, I'm going to be going to a local establishment here in a little bit to meet with the owners who are about to shut their doors. They're about to shut their doors. They don't have the ability to come and make a request for a budget increase. And there are stories like that all over the state. They don't have the ability to come and say, well, I just need more money because I can do more things with more money and it'll benefit everybody. Incredibly tone deaf. And I cannot support a request like this. And we'll get to that when we begin building the budgets and how it reacts to targets and so on. Chair Nelson and the rest of the committee will get to do that. But, you know, I said to you yesterday that I was interested in hearing about base budgets from the last biennium being what happens from here on out. Madam Auditor, this is a fairly dramatic increase when you realize and take into consideration what Minnesotans are going through right now. So I appreciate the presentation, appreciate the conversation we had yesterday, but I just think that this is really a stark message to send to Minnesotans that you're effectively asking them to pay more taxes when they're losing jobs, losing businesses, losing homes possibly, so that you can do more with your office. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
That was more of a statement. Representative Quam, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I notice a theme through here has been, well, because there are deficits, we got to be able to step up and increase our staff and et cetera. I'm not aware over the last 10 years of there being a huge issue that popped up and we had a larger deficit, I think 11-12, and definitely a much greater percentage hit. Plus, looking over the last 10 years, the decrease in workload for the auditor are pretty apparent. But looking at the school audit team, I was, well, on a school board, I was a treasurer. I also was on a Zumbra Education District, which was multiple school districts combining for efficiency. And I'm very familiar with the audit process where we'd bring someone in and they would do that. I'm trying to understand why things are broken because I'm not hearing from superintendents and others that, you know, things are broken. Being on the LAC for probably pretty close to 10 years now, the auditing process and the review, you know, paper audit, et cetera, I'm just trying to understand with a lower workload why you're expanding, why suddenly this budget deficit is so much different than what the past 10 years are, and also why this alarm about schools, when frankly, I'm not seeing a greater, I guess, impact that you would need the additional people. I'm hearing a lot of words, but not much exact dollars. Like when you're asked, what are the rents? What are the details on these offices? I would anticipate that the auditor would be able to snap their fingers, have a list of all the locations, all the rents, details on what are the percent occupancies across the year, and some sort of an efficiency. Data and information is what I anticipate and expect from the auditor. And PowerPoints are nice, but give me the numbers. And then also detail why things are, need this change. I mean, there was a reason why the counties that didn't have the option wanted the option for external auditing. And frankly, I think that was the cause of the, decrease in staffing because there was a decrease in work. There just wasn't as much work. And frankly, I hope that after this committee meeting, the more detailed information, data, and numbers are forthcoming to the members of this committee. Because frankly, having been in the legislature during a very steep deficit. Times are tight, and a flat budget was, you know, more anticipated, especially for your office. And you really have to have a strong, well detailed case presented to us to come forth with your hand saying, I want an increase. So that's the ask, and most of it's offline. But frankly, you know, we shouldn't waste words on fluff. We should be looking at the details and the numbers. Thank you.
Ms. Blaha.
Yes. Quite a few things in there. One of the things, I am not surprised that some of the people we audit are not saying that they want more oversight. That if we were to wait for an entity to say, hey, would you please give us more oversight? We wouldn't do anything on there. And I think one of the concerns is, like you were saying, Representative Kwan, one of the words, the idea that you said is we are not aware of. And I think that's a really key statement. We're not aware of it, not necessarily because it's not there. It's because it may be because we're not looking. And that is a deep concern. Whenever you see, if you take a look at the overview of what our office does, if we're overseeing $40 billion and one of the areas, the biggest expenditure, we do not have direct oversight over, that is clearly an issue. And I have to bring that to your attention. I would love it if I would only have to bring things to your attention when we had a lot of money. But I have to be honest with you, this is really a problem. And if I don't bring it to you, you can't make good decisions. I also think I have a different sense of scale than y'all might do. The idea this is a large ask, again, compared to your budget, this is a extremely small ask. It's not nearly what we've lost over the years. And it's actually quite a small ask that will give us a very good return on that investment. We talk about some of the concerns we've had. I can tell you just, again, a couple of quick examples. Again, let's go back to the Shakopee School District. We saw a superintendent that basically took over $100,000 away from students using his credit card. I would suggest that some of the things that we have gleaned from that and other credit card investigations is that local auditors are not watching credit card protocols well enough. If they had followed their internal controls, this probably wouldn't have happened. And so I think the idea of us being able to spot check to make sure that our other auditors checking to see that the purchasing cards are being used properly. We also saw when we did the petition audit in Robbinsdale this year that there were some issues that needed to be corrected. That, again, had we been spot checking, we could have said, oh, by the way, auditors, you need to be checking on this more and called their attention to that. We saw that when we started doing work paper reviews for counties. We saw an improvement in the quality of the audits for counties and ultimately better use of the money because of the oversight improvement. So I can tell you that we have definitely instances that would suggest we need to be watching school audits more carefully. And I think the final idea about just grabbing data for you. Oh, I can tell you right now, I can see Director Lindemann right now typing in and pulling up, trying to pull up all the detail on that. And I don't know, Matt, if you're able to do that. But one of the things as the auditor, you also know, I don't want to guess. And if you have a very specific data ask, I want to do it right. And so doing it on the spot doesn't necessarily help me do it correctly. So we will absolutely get you that and can get you that very clearly. But I don't want to jump, have the temptation to give you data that's not checked. It's really important for us that our data is correct. So we will definitely get you that data, but I don't want to necessarily do that again, just off the cuff. We want to really make sure it's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Who's speaking?
Representative Kwan.
Go ahead, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, having been on the receiving end of ISO audits and the other side, you know, with IBM auditing suppliers, mm-hmm. I understand that there's audit prep, and I would hope that committee prep would be to the same level that you'd be used to. Frankly, saying we're small, So our little addition doesn't matter. Well, frankly, state government's made up of a lot of components. And if we only focused on the top three, we would not be doing our job and due diligence for our, you know, citizens. So we look at what are the changes, increase, decrease, et cetera. And that would be a percent of your budget and dollars, and not just ignoring how small things are. And I'm glad to hear that you've got examples of things that have been caught in the school districts with the current system that's out there, which means that there are, you know, current avenues that are catching these things. You know, frankly, we need a better definition of this is broken before we get to here's the solution. So anecdotal does not make up for data. And that's why I was anticipating from the auditor, which should be prepped, more data instead of the shiny, nice PowerPoint, which nothing wrong with a good PowerPoint. I'm a numbers person. But thank you, and I look forward to the additional questions that other members have.
And members, the reason I asked to have your cameras turned on so we can see who's talking, this is a good example. That's a nice picture of the Capitol there, Representative Quam. But when you spoke, it that popped up and not your face, so I didn't know who was speaking. So that's one of the reasons I also asked. Now I see your face there, but when you were speaking, when you asked to speak, all I saw was the Capitol. I didn't see your
Mr. Chair, actually, I had it on earlier.
I understand that, but I didn't
want to overdo Representative my Quam, smile.
Yeah, I didn't. I just, when you spoke and asked to speak up, I didn't know who was talking because I didn't see whose face, because when you talk, your face pops up in the main screen. So the next person I have on the list is Representative Druskowski. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair members, I'm in rural Minnesota, and Mr. Chair, my computer froze up earlier, so I wasn't able to have my face here, but I was able to use another device, my phone. In rural Minnesota, Mr. Chair, believe it or not, we have very good connection out here, and if you're in Zoom, by the way, and you're unable to, you might be in a blip area or something, your phone can bring Zoom in as well. So lots of options out here. We don't need more funding. But Mr. Chair, and thank you, Auditor Blaha, for joining us today. Question for you, how many, I didn't catch the present, you said you have a bunch of satellite offices. Was there six? And then the question would be, today is the 14th of January. Are each of them occupied today?
Ms. Blaha.
Thank you. Yes, we have field offices in Duluth, Moorhead, Marshall, Rochester, and Mankato. And we also have, of course, St. Paul. We do have some of our staff that will office with a large client. So sometimes they'll also work in Minneapolis. And so, no, right now that at this point, we are working, following the executive order to anyone who can work from home needs to. And so we are. We are definitely working from home. And, you know, when you talk about rents, I think that we are, over time, one of the cost-saving things that our office has done over time, and one of the reasons that we are able to so easily move to working from home, we were able to work from home very quickly, partly because we already had the infrastructure for teleworking, since most of our staff were already teleworking at least one day of a week. And that was one way that we kept down the kind of space needs. And we were able to have, for instance, our Marshall team work on audits in Duluth and do that cross work across the state. I don't believe we're going to get to a place where we can have no in-person meeting times. Absolutely not. So the Greater Minnesota offices are very small, very compact, frankly, far too compact to have adequate social distancing, in fact, right now. So no one's in them right now. Our people still do need to work together. As much as our auditors enjoy working independently, they are very independent and very much appreciate a quiet workspace. There are times when they absolutely have to all be in the same place where they can talk to each other and work through physical documents.
So I don't see us being able to close those locations on there. But our footprint is really small because we always were doing a lot of work from home. But right now, yes, we are all working from home. We currently only have two staff members on site in our St. Paul offices to maintain it, and the rest of us are working from home.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Auditor Blaha. So I heard that they're not all occupied today. Auditor Blaha, are any of them occupied today?
No, to be clear, the only place... Oh, sorry. Blaha. Yeah, the only place that has any occupants, we have two staff in our St. Paul office, and that is the only place that is occupied today.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Auditor Blaha, have any of them been occupied at all in the last week?
Ms. Blaha.
No.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Auditor Blaha, have any of them been occupied at all in the last month?
Ms. Blaha.
I might be able to save us some time on this answer. Our offices have not been occupied. Those occupants have not been occupied since April, when we went home and started working from home.
And Auditor, if I kind of see where we're going, I think the idea is that we could get rid of all these offices. If we get rid of these offices, what is it going to cost more money in the future to have to, if we do need these in the future or to get space to do the physical stuff that you need to do?
Mr. Chair, I think it's my turn here. Is it, Mr.
Well,
Chair?
Mr. Chair, Representative Druskowski, I'm the chair of the committee. I can ask a question. And so, Representative Druskowski, let me finish asking my question. She can answer, then I'm going to come back to you. You're still on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Blaha.
Chair Nelson, I think that what we will have are, if we close an office, we are definitely going to have to rent space to do some work together. Also, we do need space for records. We still do use a lot of paper records.
We have worked hard to increase moving as many things as possible digitally. For instance, our tax increment finance division has moved all of their records to a digital format. But especially we're working with a lot of the smaller entities we work with, they are still working with a lot of paper. And there are times we just have to have places to lay paper out so that we can do our audits in a way that matches how they do their work, not only how we would like to do our work. I mean, I would love it if all of our clients right now were fully digital and it could all be digital. But you're talking about some of these small entities just don't have that capacity right now, and we need to be able to meet them where they are. And having a place to hold physical records and have a physical meeting with their materials is still going to be needed going forward.
So, Auditor, if we went all digital, we're talking about that we're adding additional costs to some of these smallest local governments, townships, cities that would increase their taxes that they'd have to charge their tenant or their residents if we force them to go totally digital and have to get the equipment and the training and that would be a cost for these local governments.
Director Lindemann might be able to answer that better than I.
Mr. Lindemann.
Chair Nelson, so yeah, if we had additional costs, the way our audit rates are structured, we would have to include those in our audit rate calculations, which would ultimately result in these local governments paying more for this. I just kind of wanted to add another thing is if we were to shut down these field offices, I guess there's a couple other issues that come to mind for me is we have lease agreements with these and with the organizations, the companies that we lease these spaces for. And so we would have to, I'm not sure that we could break those lease agreements. And if we were to find a reason to break the lease agreements, we would also incur additional costs because we have furniture and equipment in these field offices. We'd have to have staff, we'd have to make arrangements to dispose of the furniture and the equipment that we have in those field offices, which would also be a cost. So I understand that in the long term, you know, right sizing, making sure we have the right amount and size of field offices is a good idea. But I think with the pandemic, it's kind of a hard thing to just go from April and assume that we're going to be out for a year, so we eliminate it. So it would have been unnecessary costs that we would have incurred if we were to have terminated our lease.
Representative Juskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that detour. Auditor Blaha, so it sounds like the offices are going to be really completely empty for upwards of a year here pretty quick. So my question to you is, in those areas that those offices are located, have the functions of the state auditor's office been accomplished in the last year? Have your people been able to do their job? Has a job been done?
Auditor.
You know, I want to make sure that I'm answering this properly, and I can tell where you, I have a sense of where you're going with this, what you're trying to say. If we had not had that space at all to just even hold records, no, we would not have been able to complete our work adequately. So there are times when I say they're not occupied, I got to be clear. It doesn't mean that no one went in to get something. No one went in to drop something off and to store something or to grab records. I mean, they still had to do that. So we still needed a place to put the records that we assess. So if they had just disappeared, we would not have been able to do our work effectively. I think we would have missed deadlines at least. But when you're saying about whether they have physically been in the office, we have not needed to in the last set of time, we have not needed to have our people in their office to get work done. Also have to remember though, there were also a number of deadlines that were extended this year. You know, the federal government extended a number of their audit deadlines. Had those extensions not been in place, I don't know if we would have been able to hit all of our deadlines navigating lack of access both to our space and to our client's space.
Representative Juskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Auditor Blaha, have your staff done their job well in those areas? Have they done a good job or a poor job in the last year?
Auditor Blaha.
Our staff has done an amazing job, and I'm very happy to say that. We are some of the best auditors in the country. Was it a difficult thing to do? Yes, it was an extremely big lift for our staff to try to accommodate this. I know that the stress on our staff has been intense. I know that one of the reasons we're effective is we're able to retain staff because this is a great place to work, and we need to keep that going and making sure that we can attract the best staff to do great work. And so I believe they've done a great job, but remember, this is also, it has been a different job than they would have done had they had access to their space. And I don't think that long-term, that the way we're operating would not be sustainable long-term. We have to, as people are getting back to being in spaces, that the expectation of the people we audit is that we are going to be physically available to them. And as that expectation returns, we need to be able to respond to it.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Juskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Auditor Blaha. So, Auditor Blaha, have you had any staff leave the organization because the work has been too hard in the last year? The pay in relationship to the job has not been adequate or anything like that? Any of those types of things happen in those areas where you have the satellite offices?
Auditor Blaha.
You know, our staff is so small that I'm afraid if I answer that question, I'd be giving away protected data. So I don't really want to speak to individuals, tell any individual staff member's story. And so I don't want to answer that so I don't betray the expectation to privacy that they have.
Representative Juskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Auditor Blaha. So it sounds like there at least has not been a large amount, if any, for sure. But Auditor Blaha, you mentioned earlier that you mentioned something about threats or security. Has your office received threats from people? Do you feel insecure in your work, or what prompted that statement?
Auditor Blaha.
Yeah, this is a difficult time right now. I think all of us in office, particularly women in office, know that we get threats regularly. You know, so since I was elected, certainly have seen a change in the type of traffic coming my way. You know, I've gotten threats, you know,
It's really sad that I'm saying it this way, but some of the threats were the typical threats you get when you're in office, which is an awful thing to have to say out loud. One of the things that is unique to our office is we're entirely off campus. So I don't access Capitol Security since our office is off campus. We're the only constitutional office that doesn't have a security person in their building that would help cover that office. We have a bank in the first floor. So while the bank's open, there's somebody there for the bank, but there isn't an actual dedicated security staff for our building. And as far as the increased threat, I think we all see that there's generally increased threats around the Capitol right now. I can say that because it's in the paper, right? The FBI has talked about that. And I think as we think through security, I definitely do not have the level of security that other constitutional officers have. And we do need to make some changes. I don't know what those will cost. We have over time in our office made some changes to the physical structure of our office to make it more secure. But it's not just me. You know, one thing, again, as elected officials, I think we all, again, have gotten sadly used to a certain level of threat in a sense. But my staff shouldn't have to go through that. I do not want my staff to be exposed to increased threat simply because they have an elected official down the hall. And I want to make sure that my staff feels comfortable walking in and out of the parking lot, all of that. And the fact that we don't have the dedicated security, even one staffer, not even one person for the building. And that, I think, is something that is potentially problematic. We know that people we're doing a threat assessment too, like so many offices are, to figure out. But sadly, yes, there are definitely seems to be an increased threat right now, and I think we have to take it seriously.
Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Auditor Blaha. Well, Auditor, I understand what you're saying about threats, and I think everybody with an election certificate knows that. Some of it comes with the territory. I know I received an email again earlier this week. Some guy wanted to meet me somewhere and introduce me to his knuckles. So you do get threats, and I think you need to categorize them properly. But have you received any extraordinary threats?
Auditor, or
your office.
You know, I feel like
Mr. Chair, point of order.
I don't. Here's the thing. I'm a little concerned about
Mr. Chair. Point of personal privilege.
Representative Claiborne.
I believe this line of questioning is actually dangerous for the auditor. I do not believe that she should be talking about the security in her building. I do not believe she should be talking about the threats. This is beyond hyperbole. I would like this line of questioning to end for the protection and safety of our staff, our auditor. This needs to end now.
If I was going to say, I'm not going to answer the question.
Well, Mr. Chair, I hadn't contemplated that, so I appreciate that. You know, that's a good point. I was just, I know the auditor mentioned she needed more money because of threats, and I haven't heard those threats for any of our constitutional offices. I haven't heard them for others. I've heard some of the false allegations coming from our House leadership about those of us that spoke at a rally, which are not true, but I haven't heard some of the things that, or I haven't heard anything else. So anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Auditor, and members.
Yeah. Representative Claiborne, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to take this conversation in a little different direction. I would like to talk about the school audit division that you would like to create. In my district, one that you mentioned, one I will not rename, we had more than 2,000 of our community members who were very upset about the way funds were being used in the school district, and they had no avenue to restore trust in the use of funds in their district. And I would like to thank the auditor for looking into, with the limited ability that you had, with the limited request that you had from these citizens, and the limited authority that you had, to, while not all of those 2,000 plus families were pleased with the report that came out because they wanted a deeper dive into those financial records, it was very good to restore the trust in the need for public funding and the need for confidence in the referendum that they had passed. The role of your job, as I see it, is to help our school districts use their funding appropriately. It helped restore for some of our colleagues in the Senate that the money that had been appropriated and used well for our students. This piece about trust in a period of distrust is really key. And since I represent three of the larger districts in the state, not all large systems are having appropriate record keeping. And so I want to thank you for coming in and helping to reunite a majority of our community so that the focus can really be on the needs of our students and the needs of our teachers and making sure the good academics are being delivered. So I just want to make that public statement of thank you for the work that you did. I wish at that time you would have had greater authority so that you could have looked more deeply into those records, because I think it would have helped heal the rift in that community. And I think that's an important role that we have to play when it comes to the correct usage of the dollars that we allocate. I'm a pretty tight-fisted Democrat, so I want to make sure that every dollar we allocate is being used for the benefit that it was intended. So thank you, Auditor Blaha.
I didn't hear a question there, but thank you, Representative Claiborne. And as a chief, as I say, a chief suite, I agree that I want to be tight-fisted with my money. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also just a brief statement. Again, thank you to Auditor Blaha for joining us today and sharing
your Representative Carlson, we're having trouble hearing you. Can you speak closer to your microphone, or you're very muffled.
How about now?
That's better. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. I'm just making some minor adjustments. Just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, just a quick statement. Thank you, Auditor Blaha, for joining us today and sharing your agency's budget. We appreciate your time. And again, just to kind of capitalize on the moments as we kind of move forward at the beginning of the session here. One of the lessons that we learned during this pandemic is the critical importance of state agencies and their employees. While we all realize that families and businesses have suffered during the pandemic, the wealthy and well-connected have profited greatly from this crisis. So as we continue to review agency budgets, I encourage my Republican colleagues to be open to new revenue as opposed to just job-killing austerity as we go forward. So hopefully, with a divided government, we can work together and look at all sources of not just cuts, but also new revenue as well. So want to just make sure that we're looking at to limit ourselves to just cuts and not look at the great potential and possibility of new revenue would be a disservice to Minnesotans.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Next, I got Representative Greenman.
Chair and Madam Auditor, I want to go back to the piece you said about the investigators that you need. And I really appreciate what you said about building trust in basic information and also the role that your office plays with local law enforcement and others to really ensure that we have that. It'd be helpful to hear now in your current staffing how long and it takes to get back to or to be able to work with local law enforcement, if there's any requests that that you're not able to address or that you would like to address more. And I just wanted to make sure I caught that you only currently have one investigator as well. So those are my questions.
Auditor Blaha.
I want to make sure I've got this correct, because we have our legal special investigation staff
does work between them, just like our whole, all of our staffs are not always very clearly just in one role. You know, they support the entire office. We have, I would say, Director Lindeman, maybe to give the exact FTEs that we count toward investigations. Is it 2.5 or is it 3 that we actually count in that area?
Mr. Lindeman.
Mr. Chair, Auditor, I believe we have 3 FTEs currently, of which 2 are currently filled, and we're working on filling the 3rd FTE.
Thank you, Representative. Auditor.
And so every investigation is different, so it would be difficult for me to say this is what we're seeing, but what we're about the exact time it takes. And in fact, I can already hear my legal team kind of grinding their teeth, the idea of how long something takes. Don't assume that you can say how long it takes. We have to go where that investigation leads us. Where I believe we have been able to respond to the request from law enforcement. They are increasing, and that's, I'm concerned that if it gets, as they increase, we will not be able to keep pace. And also there are more things we would like to be able to follow up from the public when we have the public come in. And there are times when we simply have to say, you know what, we don't believe, you know, that's not the highest priority. So there are requests that come in from the public that we are not able to follow up with. It's something that may not be, we haven't had to drop anything that we're sure is a problem, right? There are times when we are like, when we don't see as much evidence from the outset, we're not able to get into that investigation. And so I would like to be able to expand to some of the requests we are getting that would take a little bit more work, frankly, to make sure that they were something worth following. But yeah, we are having to. I don't have an exact number of like how many calls that come in that we say no to, partly because some of that is also non-public data. If anything is open, we can't tell you whether or not we're even doing it. So it would be hard for me to tally that currently without giving away non-public data. It's a great question, though.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so just to clarify, that's 3 FTEs for the whole state.
I guess
my last question for you is, because that feels, in especially I think the idea that this is increasing, Representative Carlson said, which is, you know, as we see with this pandemic and other things, the idea that there is more oversight to do, both of what's happening in our local jurisdictions to ensure that we're protecting Minnesotans. It would be helpful to hear, and maybe we could take this offline, but with additional investigation resources, what are sort of the highlights of the things that you think we could do that we're not able to do now, or could do, to your point, more in depth, and that would help the issue?
Madam Auditor.
Yeah, we can certainly thank you, Representative Greenman, Chair Nelson, Representative Greenman. Thank you for that. We can certainly follow up with that. But again, a lot of it is improving that response time, and it is tough. That is, I think, one of the challenges I think you're all grappling with when we talk about something we're not doing. It's sometimes hard to say what's not happening because we don't have the capacity to see what is happening. One of the things I would like to be able to do, we're one of the few states, for instance, that doesn't have a tip line. One of the reasons we don't have a tip line is because we don't believe we can adequately staff it. So even just the idea of one of the things we could do with another investigator would be to have an actual tip line to make it easier for the public to find a way to get their concerns to us. But if I were to do that right now, we would not have the staffing to staff it adequately, and we would not be able to respond with that additional workload.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Ms. Rudolph, has anybody asked to be testified from the public, contacted you so that ask a question or to testify?
Thank you.
Ms. Rudolph?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Again, I'll call one more call for any questions of the auditor. If not, Auditor Blaha, thank you for coming. Thank you for your budget proposal. It gives us something to think about. It's a long time it's been said somebody about the governor's budget proposals that the governor proposes, and I guess in your cases, the other constitutional offices propose their budget, what their requests are, and the legislature disposes. So we will be working on these through the session when we get the budget forecast and we do finally get our targets, and we will hopefully be able to work through this stuff and do what we can do. Members, if there's no more questions of the auditor, we can excuse her. And before we get to adjournment, we have meetings next week, next Tuesday. We'll have the Attorney General in here with his budget requests and the Secretary of State with his budget requests and their small overviews of their committees. We can go from there. And then on the 21st, we'll have the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement before us. So members. Auditor Blaha, yes.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members. Thank you so much for wrestling with this. I know this is difficult. We want to make sure we present it to you honestly, based on what we honestly need, what is really happening here. And so based on the risks we see, we believe this is what is needed to meet those risks. But I do not envy your decisions this year, but I do want to thank you deeply for the work that you're doing, for the how much you're wrestling with these numbers. And it won't be an easy job, and I'm really glad that you're there serving Minnesota right now. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Auditor Blaha. With that, members, we're adjourned for today, and I hope to see you next week. And have a good day.